All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our MLB podcast for Tuesday, May 15th. Back from across the pond, that is
James Davis.
And I'm Doug Norrie from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com. For short, head on over to the site and grab a free 3-day trial of our projection system powered by our good friends over at Lineup Lab. Optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings MLB, NBA, while we're still running some of these two-game slates, and then obviously football and NHL and all that good stuff when it comes back around. We covered it all in the one subscription package, and you're all good to go. So we've had a couple days off. We've had about a week off from the podcast as James went traveling and the time zone shift wasn't really going to work. Buddy, you glad to be back? You still wish you were across the sea there? Are you a good vacation?
Right on, brother. Right, good. Welcome to be back. Yeah.
Are we going to do the voice? A little bit
of a mix of Australian and English, that, yeah?
I was going to say, what is it? What? I'm not sure that's totally what? English.
Has you ever been to England, brother?
I have. You have not. So we had some... So you're back in the fold here with baseball. It's good to have you back. I'm glad to be back on the podcast. Kind of threw me off last week not having to wake up and... Or I guess I could have chosen to wake up and do it on my own.
Yeah, I have text here from you. Hey, I miss you like breathing. Can't wait to see you again. I don't know exactly what that meant. And another one, can't wait to see you. I'm going to kiss you like a soldier headed for a war, which is kind of odd also because it's like an Indigo Girls quote. But it was nice. The sentiment was great. And yeah, it was nice to be missed, buddy. And then it goes on. There's like 15 or 20 like that, but those are just a small sample.
And those are literal. You don't need to take them figuratively. Okay, so we have some big news that comes out yesterday, national news, before we get to some of this DFS stuff.
Oh, news podcast. Go ahead.
That Supreme Court, in a 7-2 ruling, overturns PASPA, which had been the federal regulatory, like basically judgment that had essentially outlawed sports gambling in the 50 states outside of the one, yeah. The one place in America, the one oasis for it in Nevada. So we have a ruling now that has essentially moved, we're not going to go all the way down this rabbit hole because this is a pretty long one, and I'm not even sure I have all the answers. But we're in a move now that actually sparked in New Jersey, where New Jersey Chris Christie had filed a judgment of saying that this was unconstitutional. They overrule it. Now it is opened up to individual states to make their own determination about whether or not they want to allow sports gambling in their state. So New Jersey obviously is at the forefront of this. They are going to relatively quickly move into a place where it's legal. There's already sports books open, and now they just need to have basically the final paperwork signed. Sure. They were ready for it to win. And they kind of made the bet that it was going to. And now other states, now there's going to be some other dominoes. So I guess my question for you is, and where do you see, there's so much to talk about here, but in another announcement, DraftKings, who had also been prepared for this, along with a lot of other outfits, have said, we're going to essentially turn ourselves into a sports book. I'm summarizing their statement on it, but that's essentially what they said, is that they're going to begin offering just standard betting in the places where it's legal, like i.e. New Jersey and Nevada, and saying like we're going to start just taking, you know, against the spread action and stuff like that. Can you give a 30-second like opinion on this? Is it too long? Is it too much to break down? Like, where do you see this affecting DFS? Do you see these sites becoming just straight up sports books? Do you think it like matters? I mean, we've seen movements like this, and we saw the online poker movement move back into Jersey, and it kind of didn't seem to completely move the needle, right? Like, I just don't know. I don't know. It seems like a big deal, and then all of a sudden, at the same time, I think it's a big deal that it's going to take many years to play out, I guess is my opinion. But I don't know, like, how do you see this affecting the just DFS world writ large?
Well, it'll undoubtedly take a few years to play out overall, simply because states are slow to move on these sorts of things. And now, I'm not a lawyer or anything, but my understanding
is you play one on TV, though, so.
I play one on this podcast. I'm the closest thing that this podcast has to a lawyer, that's for sure. But my understanding, basically, is that there are some states that explicitly outlaw sports gambling, and especially online sports gambling. Many states, though, I would assume, and again, I haven't looked into this because sports betting specifically has never really been my thing. I went from poker kind of right into DFS. But that have, just relied upon federal statute to influence it. And so I think if the federal statute goes away or the ruling changes or the ruling is overturned, I imagine that, things could potentially move pretty quickly. Now, still, if you want to set up any gambling operation in any state, many states just don't allow you to operate a casino at all, right? Or have very strict licensure or gaming commissions or whatever. So the states that have existing gaming, like, California, Nevada, New Jersey, these places, Nevada already had sports betting, but I assume these places will move pretty quickly. as far as how that influences DFS, that's I think a whole different can of worms. I think the biggest thing is that it probably enshrines DFS's legal status, which I think is probably the biggest win for everyone involved. Now we know very certainly, I would say, that the feds won't come out and make a blanket ruling against DFS, which I think was completely in play as of, you know, even a couple of years ago. And so this is obviously a very good step in the right direction. As for the states that have went out of their way to explicitly outlaw or prohibit DFS, I'm curious to know what those will do, because, you know, we followed those very closely when those rulings were going on. And a lot of the reasoning at that point was, well, hey, this is outlawed on a federal level. And so what if the feds come in and, you know, get us in big trouble or take away our grant money or whatever, right? And so given that most of those states, the lip service they were playing is that they were just trying to play ball federally, because that was basically the easiest way to pass the buck, it'll be interesting to see if any of those states then go back and overturn or repeal those rulings, because that would obviously would, you know, increase the number of people who could play DFS by a considerable degree. Because all this does really is just make it a state's rights issue across the board, you know, for both DFS and for sports betting. But without that statute to point to, I think we're probably sitting pretty in the near term. And then we'll see, you know, once sports betting takes a larger foothold, how that affects things. But I think for like our business's purposes, we can probably make sports betting projections and, you know, everything else. Our model's kind of suited to do both of those things. So I'm just mostly curious, not really worried either way.
Yeah, so and some of those states, like Texas, Louisiana, Washington, Wyoming, Montana, these are some of the states where right now you cannot play DFS.
Some big states. How about Texas?
The list is longer than that. It's about 10 or 11 states. I was trying to pull it up right now. It's about 10 or 11 states altogether. So I think we're going to see, as with anything in the wheels of government, that never happens as quickly as you ever want it to or ever you think it's going to. And so I think it's a great piece of beginning starter news, and we are going to see the ripple effect probably happen from now over the next, probably decade at least. All right. One other thing, too, while you were gone. I don't know if you saw this. This is DFS related, too, but Eric Schneiderman, he was the attorney general. Yeah. the attorney general who instituted, like, the New York State ban.
Great guy, by
kind of, yeah. That threw us all off for a couple weeks or months about 2 years ago. He got brought up on. He was accused of just, like, you know, treating women like crap, and then he had to quit, so fuck that guy. Good. I'm glad his life is ruined. And and I hope he never
explicit
comes back.
Explicit tag, just right out the game. But it's worth it.
I don't care. No, it's worth it. It's worth it, because if you knew how the kind of stress that put us through during that time, it's worth it. If we get the explicit tag, we get it. But luckily, he saved everyone from fantasy football for a couple weeks, and then now he gets off and just hopefully he never comes back. All right, let's talk baseball for today. We can jump right into things. We have a lot of pitchers. There's always a lot of pitchers going. We have a lot of very good pitchers going today. Some in pretty good spots, some in questionable spots, but their numbers maybe are going to bring them up to the top, and we're going to have to probably break down where we stand between just in who you have as your opponent and what your overall stats are going to be going into the season, or excuse me, going into this game. The one guy, actually, here's my first question, Gerrit Cole. All right, so Gerrit Cole, this guy's the best pitcher in baseball basically right now. Like he's striking out 13.66 per nine. The K rate is just pretty much like a near historic level. He's like striking
actually
out 41% of his batters he's striking out so far to start the season, and only walking 6%. He's got the xFIP in the low twos. Every game that he pitches, it just seems like more and more that this is just a real thing. Now, settling in at a 13.5 K per nine is nearly impossible. Settling in at a 41% K rate is just nearly impossible. And yet, what do we make of him? Because he's a tough matchup here with the Angels, especially that top of that order is tough to get through with Trout. They put Zach Ozard up at the top. Pujols is a zero. But then, it gets a little harder down the line. I guess I'm wondering how we work on projections for him. And I've been saying in chat, really every time we go, I say, I'm not sure anymore, but I say we might still be low on Gerrit Cole. Like we've played him almost every single time.
I'd argue that we probably are slightly low on Gerrit Cole. I think you see dramatic K increase. Like he's increased his Ks by 5 per 9. So like you don't tend to see that. That's like he's adding a whole Mike Pelfrey K rate on top of his own K rate, which is, you know, is already totally fine K rate at 8.7. So yeah, I don't expect like those gains to sustain themselves. But you know, if our model is talking 10 Ks per nine, like that could absolutely be low. I mean, it's easy to forget because this guy's kind of been around for so long, but he's only 27 years old. So like he could just be like kind of shifting into his prime here, and it wouldn't shock anybody. I think he's completely, all of this to say, he's the play for me tonight, regardless of a fairly tough matchup with an Angels team that doesn't strike out a ton. I think after that, you know, I guess you just want to figure out if he's worth it on DraftKings, where things are a little bit more expensive, where it's harder to fit the money. But for me on FanDuel, yeah, I'm really hoping to play him tonight.
I think we have him right around 11 Ks per nine. I've been gradually increasing. We don't do this for everybody, but I've been gradually increasing his K per nine with each start that it continues. Right, sure. We started right around a little less than a K per nine, and then it's gone up. I know of almost every single one of his starts, I've ticked that number up. And I think that's right where we are right now with him. He's 14,000 on DraftKings. That's very expensive. You would consider not playing peak Kershaw at that price. We have to consider that Cole is like peak Kershaw at this point. Now his numbers are better than Kershaw at those levels. Right. So, I still think those Ks are pretty high. 14,000 is 13.9 specifically is very tough. The thing with Cole, and this is the reason I feel comfortable continuing to move his numbers in a way that I don't do often for other pitchers, is because he has just proven himself to be a different pitcher now, right? He throws the fastball at about the same rate. He's completely ditched the sinker. He used to throw that 17% of the time. He throws that 5% of the time. So he's taken that off of his repertoire almost completely. He's basically ditched the changeup, and now he just throws. He's basically fastball, slider, curveball, and he had been spreading out more of his pitches for his career, and now he's really just honed in on those three. So you can just say he just made a dramatic switch. We talked about this other times on the podcast. I'm with it. I think he sustains the K. I think he settles in somewhere around 11.5 Ks per nine, and which is crazy, maybe even 12. I don't think he keeps this up. And we are looking at him. He's entered the conversation with these other guys. Not Kershaw before he got hurt. Scherzer, Kluber, and Syndergaard we'll talk about in a second. These guys that are at the very, very top of the pitcher pyramid, he is right there.
Cole real quick. He did face the Angels one other time this season, had 8 Ks in 7 innings, so totally serviceable start on these price point. He did get the loss there. He gave up 2 runs, so nothing to be worried about. But he struck out this team already, you know, so maybe they've seen him. Maybe they kind of have a better book on him now, but I suspect he'll still be just fine.
Now, on DraftKings, we talked about, you mentioned that he's very expensive. For $3,000 less, you can get Syndergaard. Is that
that's
price
what I'm
difference?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, right. So the price difference there is enough for you. Syndergaard's not a fantastic matchup here. Toronto, it is in the National League, so he gets to roll through the pitcher spot at least with this team. But you think that savings is enough to pivot down to him? The FanDuel, I don't think you need to worry about it. The price difference is $1,800 price difference. I still think I'm fine with Cole here, but you think the $3,000 is enough savings on Syndergaard to consider just pivoting all the way down?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, yeah, like neither guy has a fantastic matchup today, but I think the Blue Jays matchup arguably better. They have the 7th highest K rate against right-handed pitchers this season. Their WOBA is still excellent, which makes sense. They've got a lot of good hitters, but the Ks really are, I think, enough to float him here. And again, that price difference is just so dramatic. And you know, when you're talking about saving $3,000, that's like a whole player. That's like Wilmer Flores's price, right? And so you wouldn't play Cole and just not play a third baseman today. And so I think for that reason, yeah, I'm going to go Syndergaard. And I think, you know, there's some mid-range options that I'm sure we can get to go with it. But I think if you play Cole, like the lineups when you lock Cole in, it just looks way too stars and scrubsy for me to really want to go there right now.
Yeah, and I think that is an interesting thing to consider in tournaments, because I think that it will keep people off of him at this price point, and I think that will drive the ownership down. So I think from a GBP perspective, if you are looking to, my guess is at this price, you'll get him at the lowest you would have seen him ownership wise for a while, just because, like you said, it is so tough to fit him. And I think from that point of view, if you think he has this kind of elite stuff in him, it's worth it from tournaments. And you're probably giving up too much equity on him if you're just because that. I mean, yeah, I can't remember a time where a guy was this expensive, except for, like I said, Kershaw, maybe like 2 years ago or something.
And by the
like
way, how impressed our system is with Syndergaard on DraftKings today with the price and the opportunity. And he's just a fantastic pitcher. Like, we didn't talk about his peripherals. But, you know, having a 10.4 Ks per nine and a 1.9 walks per nine is already excellent on its own right. So, like, you know, the guy's just a phenomenal pitcher, so like, let's not take anything. And he did this last year in the 7 starts he had coming back from injury. And the year before that, he was basically the same pitcher too. So this is just who he is. He's a phenomenal, you know, true number one type pitcher. So you're not really giving up anything. But if you lock Cole in, you just get Syndergaard in the pitcher two slot. They're like, no sweat. Just put the 24/7 down on pitching. And then I'm sure there's guys who are like batting eighth or whatever that we can fill in around it. So just kind of an interesting spot. So our system is basically saying you must play Syndergaard. And the real question is, who do you play alongside him?
Okay, so let's talk about that. So you mentioned having seen some other maybe mid-tier options. Who kind of stands out to you in that respect? Are there guys like maybe under like sub 10K that you would, or maybe 10K or lower? That's usually what I look for in like a second sure. starting pitcher, unless we're talking, I mean, if we go through salary, it's, you know, Greinke's 11.8. That seems a little expensive than Syndergaard. Then you go down to Alex Wood. So I guess anyone we discuss here is going to be 10 or under. Who kind of stands out to you among that group?
Yeah, so there's two guys, and I'm curious to know your thoughts on these guys because I think they kind of cut a different profile. I think the safest one in my mind is probably Masahiro Tanaka. Tanaka tonight, going into this game, 8.7 Ks per nine, 1.94 walks per nine, basically the same peripherals he had last year, minus 1K per nine. So that's significant, but we're only through an eight-game sample size so far. Still, though, you know, 46 innings and eight starts, not terrible. The matchup with Washington, yeah, it's not exactly the matchup you dream up for a right-handed pitcher necessarily. They are one of the hardest teams to strike out among National League teams and are also just, you know, their WOBA against right-handed pitchers is even higher than Toronto's. But at 8,400, I mean, that's not very much to pay for a guy who can go deep into games, who's going deeper into games this season than he was last season, and whose peripherals are just good. Like, when you hear those peripherals, like, that's solid pitcher two type status for probably, I don't know, 10 or 15% discount on what you'd normally pay for it. So I think he's, in my mind, the safest pitcher two option right now.
Yeah, it's going to be weird because, like you said, that's not a huge money line favorite. It's basically even, I mean, slight favor for the Yankees here, minus 115. We'll probably have to keep an eye on weather. It looks like there's rain somewhere in the forecast later. I do like to have, what I look for in starting pitcher two, and I've mentioned this before, is I want to have a guy who does have some K stuff, which he does. I want to see him at a depressed price, mostly because maybe he's run bad with some wins. He's like, his win total is low. That's not something I care about, but it sometimes keeps the price down because he hasn't scored as many points. And right. He did run bad at the beginning of the season with some ERA stuff, like the left on base. He was really, really struggling with left on base stuff. The BABIP wasn't too bad, but he was just, whenever guys would get on, they would score. His xFIP is about a run lower. I think what people will keep away from him is that matchup, and that's the only thing that makes me a little worried about him, and I still think we're buying low. So I think this is one of those ones where, you know, I've mentioned this before, it's like, will the matchup, will the peripherals and stuff be good enough to overcome a not ideal matchup? It's close, and I think I wouldn't feel terrible doing it, and I also wouldn't feel great. Who's the other guy you had a question about, or that you were considering?
The other guy is Nick Pivetta. Pivetta, you know, he checks a lot of the boxes that you just discussed. I mean, the K stuff has been better than Tanaka this season. It was better than him last season too. 9.5 Ks per nine last year, and he's really cut the walks down. You know, he had 3.86 walks per nine last year, which led to a lot of big innings. Give up a lot of runs. I mean, a 6 ERA was certainly not what you were hoping to see from a DFS perspective. He's trimmed all that down this year. You know, the walks, 2.3 per nine. The home runs are down. The xFIP is at 3.5. So all those numbers sound fantastic, except when you get into the innings per start, the guy's only thrown 39 innings across 8 starts. So he was very cheap. He's 7,200, which basically means you can play him alongside Syndergaard and get every bat you could possibly want. But is that just too much risk to take on? You know, a guy who only throws fewer than 5 innings per start this season? Like, you don't even get the win if you don't go 5 innings, right? So,
right.
And the money line, you know, all the numbers here, it's not a super impressive total that he's supposed to allow here. I mean, this game has a 10 over-under with Philly favored just minus 122. So, you know, you're not really getting away with anything from that perspective. Is he getting too greedy to play Pivetta here against Baltimore?
It's funny about K per nine versus K percentage, right? Like, I reference K per nine more, just because, I don't know, my eyes just go to that stat a little bit more.
But yeah, it's just what's listed on Fangraphs, basically.
Right, basically, yeah. I mean, you can get K percentage a little lower. Sometimes K percentage is actually the better indicator because,
yeah, agreed.
If you look at some guys, you can strike out everybody. Your K per nine can look great, and you just, if that's all you do, like, you
right. Let's say that you never ever get an out when someone hits the ball into play, right? Like, your K per nine will be infinite because you're like, you only get outs by striking people out, right?
So right, like, so you get like I'm gonna use Darvish as a reference point here and then I'll go back, but like, Darvish has his best K per nine of his career and his lowest K percentage, right? Like, so it's what's happening to him, right? So far this season, he's striking more guys out, but it's not, he's not striking them out, you know, per batter more. He's just getting it, those are the only outs he's creating. Pivetta sort of falls into this in that the K per nine looks good, but if you, like you said, when you look at the innings pitched, he's just not getting through a ton of innings. I guess,
but it's not like he's not. But so I hear your point on that, but it's not like he's giving up tons of hits and allowing tons of walks, right? Like, it's basically just that he's just getting pulled out of these games. Like, I don't know. I mean, the BABIP at 330 is not too dissimilar to what it was last year. Everything seems to be heading in the right direction. Like, I'm not saying he's an ace or anything, right? But I still think there's reason for optimism at a really low price point, I guess.
Yeah, I agree with you. Here's the thing. I did a bad job of setting it up because I actually don't mind him here. And I think I like him against this Baltimore lineup that will strike out a lot. They're very righty heavy, and the lefties they do put into their lineup are huge K guys. Now, they're power guys like Alvarez, Davis, guys like this. They can cause problems for you. But when they're not causing problems, they are just – they're great ways to just rack up fantasy points because they just K a ton. I
the lowest walks per nine in the majors too as well against right-handed pitching. Like, never walks. They strike out a ton. Yeah, I think it's a good spot. There's obviously a tremendous downside though. Like, if those big bats do start making some contact, things could get out of hand pretty quick.
And I was just looking through Pivetta's pitch counts real quick. He's basically been around 95 pitches. I'm going to summarize it, except for one very bad start against Washington where he went only one inning. So that one inning, if you remove that game it's not fair to just cherry pick.
Then he's like seven games for 37 innings, which isn't nearly so bad, right?
Exactly, right. So then he's like, right, now he's around 5.5 innings per start or something like that. It all of a sudden doesn't look that bad. But look, you know, if you're a pitcher that can go one inning and give up a lot of runs, that's gotta be a check against you also, because you just can't overlook that, because that just doesn't happen to the really good pitchers in the league generally, right? Like, you get your Dylan Bundy performance here and there, and you're gonna get like this Nick Pivetta one inning game. If they're able to do it, it can happen again. And I still don't mind him. There's other cheap pitchers, and that's kind of where my list stopped. I like a lot of those guys. Some people might gravitate toward a Tyler Mahle, who's been pretty good with the K's. I think he's probably a little too expensive, and I do not think that he's able to sustain the K rate, which is about a K per inning that he's shown so far, even though he's got a decent matchup against the Giants. Not a guy that had barely been on my radar until I looked at some of his underlying numbers, which just didn't look as bad. And we're just in a weird spot with we got a lot of bad pitchers against the bad teams, and the pitchers that we mentioned already are just in not so great spots. The only other guy that I think you maybe can consider because of the matchup is Alex Wood. He's very expensive. And one thing about the Marlins are not good, but this Marlins team really does not strike out. Like, when you put Martin Prado at the top of your lineup, and I'm actually just blanking on who hits leadoff for them. But when you put, I know Prado specifically was the guy that got back into the lineup and really lower. Oh, JT Realmuto, right. So these guys at the top of the lineup against the lefty, and Starlin Castro too, that top three, really, they don't strike out. So when you're looking at a guy like Alex Wood that he goes low innings, or excuse me, he can go low pitch counts at times, you're not increasing your K expectation all that much. All right, we've been going long because we started off with non-DFS stuff. We're going to get into some stacks here. Hit us up with a sponsor, and then we'll talk about some teams and good spots on the offensive side.
Sure, let's talk about fantasyfactor.com. It's a great place to go for all your daily fantasy sports needs. I mean, they've got great salary cap game formats. They're constantly trying to innovate, come up with other cool offerings as well. They got a home run derby contest this year that's been a lot of fun. So go check them out, fantasyfactor.com. Go play salary cap game formats like you're used to without playing against those sharks putting in 100 lineups at a time. So if you're the type of player who plays 5 to 100, say, lineups per night, I think they're definitely a great spot to check out.
All right, we talked about some expensive pitchers, which is going to make, anytime we talk about this many expensive pitchers, Cole, Thor, Greinke, all these guys, if we're going to allocate this much salary to pitching, we probably have to keep, you would think we need to keep our offensive side of things maybe a little bit cheaper. Are there stacks that you see with teams priced reasonably today? That's become at times more and more difficult. Like, we had Tampa Bay yesterday coming on the cheap. You know, anytime you're rostering these, it's always it's a very weird middle ground where you're trying to roster teams in good spots, but sometimes teams are cheap because they stink, right? Yeah. Like, the Rays are cheap. The Rays aren't cheap because they mash everybody. The Rays are cheap and facing a bad pitcher, and now we need to decide who has the better of the matchup here, because the Rays are, like, I'm just using this example because it just happened yesterday, but we have to kind of decide, do you see a team that you would trust on the cheap, or do you think it's worth it to try to jam in some higher salaries? It's going to be very tough if we're rostering it at the guys that we mentioned here. Who do you like in on the offensive side of things?
Yeah, I think if you're looking cheap, I like the Red Sox. Well, they're not cheap at all, but I do really like them against Daniel Mangdon. Mangdon, you know, it's such a bummer because he's just really pretty darn bad. Like, just, he's really your dream matchup for a DFS team if you want to put up a huge total, in that he doesn't strike anyone out, but he also doesn't walk anyone. So the upside is just through the roof, gives up a ton of fly balls as well. So the upside is through the roof. He's not, not been terrible just on an ERA basis or even an xFIP basis the last couple of years, but just like the least scary guy ever, and especially a great guy to target your K heavy but high upside bats, because he kind of takes strikeouts off the table. So I do like the Red Sox, but yeah, if you're looking cheap, I actually think the Phillies are kind of interesting here. They're going up against Andrew Kashner. Vegas has, like I mentioned earlier, this game at a 10 total with the Phillies side favored. So, you know, Vegas is saying the Phillies are going to score something like 5 runs here, and that's a lot for a team like the Phillies that doesn't necessarily feature a lot of big name, huge bats. For Kashner's purposes, he's kind of weird, right? Because last year, he's kind of inexplicable, actually. So I'm actually curious to know what you think of him. Last year, it was 166 innings. So pretty big sample size, 4.6 Ks per nine. That's so low. 3.5 walks per nine. I mean, these peripherals are like you read about. I mean, basically, some of the worst peripherals I've ever seen on a guy who managed to go 166 innings in the major leagues. Then he turns around this year. He pads back on the walks, but also nearly doubles his K rate up to 8.06 per nine. So who's the real Andrew Kashner? I mean, is he the guy who we saw last year who's like, you know, Mike Pelfrey light, basically? Or is he just rounding into kind of a just generically bad pitcher with control problems who can also give up a lot of big games? What's your take on him?
His pitch FX stuff is basically the same as last year, and it's two different teams. So I think from that point of view, the truth is probably just somewhere in the middle. Now, his Ks for his career, this year's Ks are more in line with his career numbers. Now, not to say that they've all, it's been good, but
I mean, his career total most of the seasons, right? So he's not.
Yeah. 7.5, like somewhere around there. Like last year, those 166 of innings of just being god awful last year really drove it down. He's still bad though. So I think I do like the Phillies. I think they're coming cheap, especially on DraftKings. Hoskins at 4,400, it's pretty cheap. Althea has been a guy who's, since he's moved into the starting role, we've seen him be a chalk play at times on FanDuel at only 27. He's 2,700 now. He was at 2,200 for a while.
Yeah.
That's price has slowly crept up. Even guys like Herrera, Cesar Hernandez, those guys are getting a little expensive because their position has been set for most of the season. Now, I like him. Nick Williams, especially if Nick Williams moves into even like the 5 or 6 hole, not a fantastic hitter, but if we're trying to target a cheaper team, that's pretty much where I was going to land too, I think, just because Kashner is, I don't buy that he's going to be, if anything, he's not going to stick at 8 Ks per nine, right? And he's always had walk issues. So right. I think if anything, it just continues to get worse for him this year. Just being an Orioles pitcher seems to be a bad thing for most guys this year. Like if you're taking the mound for the Orioles, there's just a good chance that you just completely stink.
Yeah.
So I don't know what is going on with that team or how they were managed to cobble together a pitching staff like this that is probably going to start trending toward historically bad. But anyway, yeah, I'm with you on the Phillies. I don't, from the cheap standpoint too, I don't mind the Diamondbacks in the spot.
Yeah,
Goldschmidt is still coming pretty cheap. They don't have the greatest matchup in the world. And obviously guys like Goldschmidt, from a matchup standpoint, guys like Goldschmidt and guys like Souza are much better when they're facing lefties.
Souza
and
the Bruiser.
We're still getting, he's going to move up in the lineup because AJ Pollock got hurt last night and he's most likely going to be out for a while here. So I think we see Souza move up in the lineup and Peralta, Goldschmidt, Souza, even though Chacin is a righty and for two of those three guys, their splits trend the other direction. Chacin is awful, man. I have 5.8 strikeouts per nine so far, walking more than 4 guys, xFIP over 5. It wasn't like, you know, he was, for the Padres last year, he was merely serviceable, and that was probably a lot of that was based on park. This year, plays with the Brewers, things have not gotten better. He's struggling to get even through 5 innings. It doesn't project very well for him. So the Diamondbacks guys, their numbers are down a little bit because they just aren't scoring a ton of runs, which makes sense. This is actually one of those lineup things, right? It's like you have like I mentioned with Tampa Bay, you have a bad pitcher, and you have a park that seems like it's depressing power now with this humidor thing because they just haven't been scoring a lot of runs. You have a name like Goldschmidt. Like, do you think Chacin is bad enough? Because like guys like Daniel Descalzo, he stinks. I'm trying to look at the rest of their lineup. Chris Owings, Kettle Marte, these guys are not good. But Chacin is not good either. Do you think that fits enough of the check boxes where I know we're taking a bad team, but the pitcher is just bad enough that I can consider maybe rostering these guys in cash?
Yeah, for 100%. I mean, one thing that's just kind of unique to tonight in some ways is that we're talking about stacks, but like our DraftKings lineup right now has position players from 8 different teams on it, right? So like it's not looking and saying like, oh well, geez, you just simply can't get away from stacking this team against this pitcher, right? It's saying you're just going to be kind of picking and choosing and getting value where you can find it. And I think on nights like that, you're going to see you know, you're going to find yourself going against people's platoon splits sometimes. You're going to find yourself kind of middling out in many cases a lot of times because it doesn't necessarily lend itself to just stacking the heart of some expensive order. And especially when you have some relatively expensive big name pitching, that becomes even more likely. I think in the case of a guy like Goldschmidt, I mean, when you go back and look at his historical record, sure, he's much better against left-handed pitching, but the guy's just a bananas hitter in general. Like, you know, he's not the type of guy who goes out there like, say, David Ortiz or something, who just mashes righties but disappears against lefties. He's just super solid coming and going. And so I think for someone like him, you can play him regardless. But, you know, Souza is a little bit more like that. Like, Souza is a little bit more platoon heavy, but the price is just so low that you're not really, you can't sweat it too hard, you know?
Yeah, 2,200 for Souza on FanDuel is basically is a pun play. And Goldschmidt, you're buying on a 700 OPS season for Goldschmidt so far. Yeah, and if you think that's going to, like, him at 37, this is a guy we've seen on FanDuel at least trend up to mid fours,
even we've like seen him touch five. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. And if you're getting him at 3,700, you're buying because the BABIP is 50 points lower than his career average right now. The home run, the fly ball is lower. Now, that can maybe be expected because if we thought the power was going to be depressed with the moves, like the just the, I was going to say, the atmospheric move in Arizona, then maybe we do see lower power numbers for him, and it's still just not going to be an 11% home run right. fly ball rate, I don't think. Like, especially when the rest of his stuff, soft contact up a little bit. Maybe there's some warning signs, but not enough. He's not a 700 OPS guy, and that's what he's priced as right now. So I think I'm fine buying on him. Give me one more stack before we get out of here because we're starting to run a
little. Yeah, well, let's just touch on a few other pitchers that you could potentially target today. You have Anthony Banda making his first start of the season against Kansas City. Banda came out last year for the Diamondbacks and was kind of mediocre. You know, he had really good K stuff, 8.7 Ks per nine. The walks were higher than you'd like to see. He actually ran really hot in terms of a home run to fly ball. The guy gives up a ton of fly balls, but only allowed home runs on 3% of them. There's legit no way that that can possibly sustain itself throughout his career in the majors. So last year was a 6 ERA, 4.8 xFIP guy. He'll be playing his trade once again against the Rays tonight, or against Kansas City. And I think if you can get, once again, you know, some of those cheap guys at the top of the order, you know, DraftKings is pulling out like Whit Merrifield right now. He's not super cheap at 4,300, but I think he's in a pretty good spot here. There was one other guy, Salvador Perez. I think Perez is another guy you could definitely throw out there against Banda. And Banda is a lefty too. So, you know, those getting those guys on the good side of their platoon, Perez in particular, seems like a pretty good spot to me. The other guy that our system is looking at a little bit is Ronaldo Lopez. Lopez, you know, the young pitcher for the White Sox, going up against the Pirates. So, you know, again, probably be able to find some kind of cheap value there. He was bad last year, 5.6 Ks per nine. He's bad again this year at 6.2 Ks per nine and added a whole 1.2 walks as well. So 5.75 xFIP last year, 5.54 xFIP this year. Guy's just a bad pitcher, and I think the Pirates are in a good spot as well. And potentially one where you can find some relatively cheap bats as well.
Yeah, like Adam Frazier hitting leadoff. He's not a great hitter by any means. He's not even really that good of a hitter, but he's basically the minimums on both sides. And if you're going to hit leadoff against in a good pitching, or excuse me, in a plus pitching
matchup. Yeah, exactly. 2,800 on DraftKings, I mean, that's like below... That's like one of the cheapest starters. And, you know, if he's going to be batting leadoff, he's certainly a tremendous value there.
All right, we're going to get out of here. DFSR.com, Daily Fantasy Sports Rankings. If you want to type in more just keystrokes, go and sign up for a free 3-day trial of our projection system powered by our good friends over at Lineup Lab, optimal apps for FanDuel and DraftKings. We'll be back again tomorrow talking more baseball. Buddy, good to have you back on the pod. Ready to get back rolling in for the podcast for the rest of the year. And talk to you tomorrow.
Later.